Well, welcome everybody. It's February 3rd, 2011. This is Seedlings coming to you live from World Bridges. And this is Alice Barr. I'm in Kennebunkport, Maine, where it's snow. And some of you probably heard our podcast yesterday, our snow day show on the fly. The whole state of Maine and Massachusetts, and probably I heard two-thirds of the rest of the country was kind of closed down. Anyway, I'll send it down to, Cheryl's going to be a little late. She's coming in shortly. And I'll send it down to Bob.
This is Bob Sprankle down in South Berwick, Maine. And we have snow down here, too. How bizarre. Yeah, lots and lots of snow. And I guess that's sort of the mantra for everybody. And I am going to send it down to Massachusetts. But first, I'll introduce our guest tonight. This is a great show. We have Bridget Berman, who I met, had the fortune to meet at TEDx Redmond. And if you listen to Seedlings or Bit by Bit, you've heard me talk plenty about TEDx Redmond. And I got to meet her there. And truly an amazing student who has just done unbelievable work at, how old are you now, Bridget? 16?
I'm 16.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. And you'll hear all about it. And she's going to talk a lot about bullying tonight and the work that she's done with that. So Bridget, why don't you introduce yourself and fill in the holes that I didn't just cover, and then we'll get going.
Okay. Well, thanks for your kind words, and thanks so much for having me on today. I'm really excited. Right. So I'm Bridget Berman. I'm 16. I live in Massachusetts. And when I was 14, I wrote the book Dorywit's Guide to Surviving Bullies as a guide and almost self-help book for teenagers and kids dealing with bullying. And because I feel like a lot of times as kids, we don't have enough resources that we can really relate to and use, whether to help ourselves or just to have a good time and enjoy reading. So I created my character, Dory Witt, to help kids, really.
It's great.
It's a really fantastic book. I told Bridget the other day, Alice, I wanted to wait to read it until close to the show, so it was really fresh in my mind, and I just spent the entire day, the entire read in a cafe, just pouring through it, and every teacher should read this book. It's just so great, and then, of course, the hope is to get every student to read this book, and I was just so amazed that you covered every angle of this. You didn't just talk about bullying. You talked about internet safety. You talked about, you know, friendship problems. And it sort of follows the year of Dory Witt in a diary form, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty much what it is, because I mean, I think a lot of times when we think about bullying, we think it has to be physical or calling people bad names, but really it covers so many different things that I think many times are overlooked.
And just so people know, when they see the chat transcript later, because we add that, Bridget is in the chat room as Dory Witt, so she's using her moniker to be in there, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Thanks, Peggy, for putting that link in. Yeah, we'll drop some more links. So I don't even know where to start. I mean, there's just so much, and you know, even lately in the news, so much talk about what's happening, what's not happening. But I feel like you really have a different view than maybe Alice and I do, and maybe a lot of teachers, because you are talking to kids all over the nation. Are you international now, or are you just touring around the United States for talks?
I don't really tour internationally, but I have been on ABC Australia Radio, and I've been in contact with kids from as far as India who've been asking about bullying advice and trying to be team leaders and things like that. So, but mostly touring in schools, especially in the New England area, just because it's easier for me to get there with school and everything.
Yeah. And before you wrote the book, you put out a survey. How did you do that? Was that on Facebook or?
Actually, when I first did that, I didn't have a Facebook because my mom didn't want me to because I was still in middle school. So I created first an online survey, which I posted on my website. And I just tried to get the word out about my website through emails and encourage my friends who had Facebook accounts to get the news out. And then I actually got together in focus groups with teenagers in Massachusetts to talk about a different questionnaire they had created so we could talk about bullying and I could hear their thoughts. So that when I actually put pen to paper, I had actual experiences because I was really worried that when I wrote, it would just be kind of like single-minded, like what I thought. And I kind of wanted it to be something that tons of different kids could relate to, no matter where they're living and what type of bullying experiences they're going through.
That's amazing. I mean, that you had those focus groups. That's just incredible. And how old were you? Like 14 when you were doing that?
I wrote my first survey when I was 13, but I started really doing everything when I was 14. Though.
That's incredible. I mean, just to have that opportunity, and I'm sure the other students really benefited from that opportunity as well. So you use a lot of quotes that you got from those focus groups and the data that you researched in the book, and then I love how every chapter starts with some facts from different organizations that have also done research. What were some of those organizations? I know you have it at the back of the book, but maybe just a couple that you could throw out to us where you got a lot of your info.
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of my favorite organizations is Stop Bullying Now, and they have just so much wonderful information for both students and teachers. And I found they had a lot of facts that I could use, statistics, and also different methods that they had tried to use, which I could see with my own research. Well, this is what I did. Maybe this is what adults and psychologists are doing. So what's really actually going to be field tested and going to work? But I would definitely encourage people to visit the websites. I have a bunch of them in the back of my book because – I mean, for me, it was really helpful because I think a lot of times when we think of bullying, we think, oh, we're like the only ones dealing with it. But I mean, according to my research, at least 30% of students across America report suffering from bullying. And a lot of kids won't admit to bullying. So I think that's really something that helps us just relate to bullying. So.
Yeah, another fact that really blew me away when I saw you at TEDx Redmond was 40% of adults admit to bullying.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just,
yeah, that's wild.
It's not just a kid thing. And, you know, I think about that a lot, like the tone. I mean, we're talking about the tone a lot lately with what's happened in the news, and trying to get people to bring the tone down. And, you know, even watching, you have a clip on your YouTube channel, about, you were on, I don't think it was CNN. You were on a news show, and it was talking about Phoebe Prince, you know, we just came up on the anniversary of that. And, one thing that I really thought was, you know, it was a very fast paced show. You were on, there was another, a young woman on who had been bullied, a dad of one of the students, but I kind of left feeling like the host was kind of a bully. Yeah, she was really coming on really heavy, because the whole slant was really attacking the school, and it's like, wow, you know, here we are talking about bullying, but on our news channel, there's such a tone of being tough. You know, and kind of, she used a lot of sarcasm when she was talking about the school, like, oh, you're the victim, you know, and you know, clearly the interviews that they had of the superintendent and things, I mean, he was not, you know, portrayed well on that clip, but But they did you get a sense of that this felt kind of antagonistic on that show?
I think it's really interesting you bring that up, Mr. Sprinkle, because I know other people have brought that up too. And this one, definitely, there was not as much of the positive, let's try to help the situation. It was more of let's attack the situation and point out what everybody's doing is wrong. And I think it's so frustrating because, I mean, as kids, these are the people we see on TV every day. We look up to them. And then we see them behaving this way, talking about anti-bullying. And we get a little confused, right? It's like mixed messages. I mean, like our parents are telling us maybe to act one way. We're seeing it on the news another way. And I don't, it's kind of sad sometimes because when you have tragic events like these, there's definitely more than one aspect going in. I mean, yes, perhaps the school should have been more proactive, but what about the peers who perhaps weren't really, maybe they weren't saying enough? Maybe the community didn't have enough programs in place. Maybe the community didn't have enough budget for the school to even have anti-bullying policy. So there's so many more things that play into tragedies like these, and sometimes it's frustrating when it seems one person takes the fall. So, I mean, not that one person just took the fall for this event, obviously, but I mean, when the media sometimes points out one person as being the one.
Right. Yeah. It is sort of part of our culture of tone, definitely. And I don't watch a lot of TV, but I see that. What about you, Alice? Do
Yeah,
you?
absolutely. I really worry about some of the things that are shown on TV in terms of just attitudes, maybe, or just people get irritated really easily instead of trying to talk things out or model positive behavior. And I think, we all know that especially younger children start learning how to mimic and model behavior right from the get-go. And I worry about how much influence some of the media has in showing that kind of violence and showing that kind of antagonism. And also, I worry about some of the adults listening to students, really listening to students about what they have to say. What do you think about that?
I think that's a really good point too, you bring up because, I mean, definitely, I think that there's sometimes a communication gap when we talk with like kids and adults, and not always, but I think one of the reasons is when you're a teenager. I mean, I can just say this from my own life because our junior prom might even be postponed, and for me, it's like, oh my gosh, the whole world is coming to an end, and for my mom, she's looking in, oh, Bridget, it's just going to be a few more weeks away. Everything's going to be okay. And I think it's similar with bullying, where kids will say, I don't have any friends. Everybody's turns against me. Life is horrible. And for an adult, you might be able to look back and say, oh, well, I got through high school. It's going to be okay. You're going to move on. And for us teenagers, like, no, this is our world. This is school is everything. We spend like hours and hours every day in school. And for us to feel like we're not safe, we don't have any friends, and we're being attacked maybe from all sides, as sometimes, victims of bullying might feel, then to sometimes when you go home or you try to talk to an adult and it's like there's just communication gap. It's not on purpose, I don't think. I don't think it's because adults don't care or anything. I think it's just because sometimes we're not able maybe to communicate because, our age difference or I'm looking at things differently, I guess, because of our age. And you guys have a lot more experience, and so you're able to look, I think sometimes you guys are able to look more broadly at the picture, where sometimes we're a lot more narrow.
Yes, I totally agree. And I mean, I have to force myself to think back to when I was younger, when I watch, things that my daughter's going through. And yeah, there is almost like this, oh, I can see the bigger picture, and there'll be a day where this looks so small, but it really isn't small at that time. I mean, it really is real. And And I it is, it's one of the ironies, as you get to be a parent and as you get older, you have to almost force yourself to remember what that was like. And it's so painful as a parent to watch your child go through something and, say, oh, it's going to be okay, this will be better someday. But it just, you're right. It is the entire world. It is everything. And, just watching students at school that may have a falling out with a friend or something happen, and, learning just shuts down. I mean, you can't expect that to continue because this is what takes over his or her brain. These are real things. And I remember when I talked to you in Redmond. One thing that really stuck out with what you were saying was you were thinking that students can relate to you talking to them much more than like the police officer coming in because of your age. And I think that's what's so great about this book. And I don't know if there's any other book out there by another teen talking about this, but I mean, this is just such a gift to your peers because it really is closer to that experience than us older folks can bring ourselves back to, and that's great. I mean, and you wrote this when you were 14, so and you had just gone through a bullying experience, so it's really right there. And on top of that, it's so mature and so filled with research and great advice, and it goes great for students and great for teachers as well. And I wanted to ask you, how did you write a book like this at 14?
Yes.
How did you find the time? And did you have any guidance or the research? I mean, did you just go out and find those groups by yourself, or how did all that happen?
Well, just want to thank you for all the kind things you said about me and my book. Firstly, that really warms my heart when I hear people say that, because I mean, my biggest goal in life is just to reach out to kids and say, look, we're here. There are people here trying to help you. And to your question, I don't know. It just started happening. I was really, really upset, and my mom said, Bridget, you can be really upset about this, and yeah, it's a really painful time in your life, or you can go and make a difference in someone else's life so that they don't have to feel like this either. And she was right, and I was really motivated by what she said. So after I created my questionnaire and survey, which was January, and February and March was more of administering that, I started to just write. Mom said I should just write about how I felt. And so I just started writing. And by the summertime, I'd had a few chapters done. And then I realized I had a direction for my book. And so all of summer, 8th grade going into 9th grade, I wrote all day. And I would sit on the dock, on Long Lake up in Maine, and just write. And then I did lots of research too, because I wanted it to be, if you want to read it for fun, there's a story, because sometimes, there's not always as much of a fun story. If you want the advice, there's advice at the end. And if you want facts, well, there's some facts. So you can say, hey, look, it's not just Bridget saying these things. There's been national surveys done. And then I definitely come to my mom. I would sit and be like, Mom, can you listen to this? Can you hear this? She'd be like, okay. And my sister and my dad too. They've always been so supportive and so great. They're always there for me. They've always been listening to me. And I'd ask advice, like, do you think I need to develop this scene more or this character more? They'd be like, yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about. And all 9th grade, my mom, not all of 9th grade, mostly the fall of 9th grade, my mom helped me edit it, because she's really, really good at grammar and stylistic writing, because she was an English major. So that was really helpful, because I'm a really rotten speller. Even spell check sometimes can't catch me. So and it's really good that she was helping. And I just have a whole support team too, of people who've kind of become my family. And if I need help, I need advice, I talk to them, I ask them. And definitely when I was writing, I would, send it to some of them and say, what do you think about this? Could you relate to this? Do you think, does this make sense? And they would always be like, yeah, or no, this doesn't make sense at all. So I'm really thankful to have had that support team and met so many great people along the way.
There are parts in it that ring so true, and some of those are so painful. Hearing Dory talk about, you know, at the end of the day when things have gone completely downhill, and you know, she thought they were going to get better, but one of the most painful moments in the book for me is when she, I think it's the principal or the vice principal, is actually accusing her of being the bully. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've seen this happen. The victim or the person who's being bullied, you know, the other people say, she started it. This is what she said or did. And mm-hmm. And Dory goes in and talks with this gentleman. And then the line that really just burned a hole through me was where, you know, Dory's saying, this doesn't make sense. And he says, I will decide what makes sense. Which to me, that line just stopped me cold because, you know, just like you said, here's something that's happening. It's a whole world to the student, and this guy is not seeing it at all. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, and, we can't make sense of it. You know, as teachers, we can help, but we can't say we'll decide what makes sense. Where did that scene come from? I mean, did you have experiences like that, or seen teachers like that just didn't get it right away? Or, I mean, that one really hit me.
I think I'd be lying if I said I've never had an experience similar to that. That being said, I don't think it was quite as painful and direct as Dory's. That really came from, one of my biggest things is that we always have to talk. As kids, you need to talk. You need to let people know what's going on, because if teachers or parents or trusted adults don't know that you're in trouble, they're not going to be able to help you. And when I talk to kids, so many kids were like, you know, I've gone and talked to a principal or a counselor, a parent, you know, aunt, uncle, and they've just been like, deal with it, big deal. Or it's even turned around that perhaps the bully turns into, says, hey, you know what, you're going to try to stand up for yourself, I'm going to come at you too. And for me, that was really, really painful. Like, it just breaks my heart when I hear about kids who are trying to find help, who are saying, I need help, and people who are just like, individuals who are just like, deal with it. It's not a big deal. So this was almost like my shout out to, hey, you know, this isn't every school when I speak, but I feel like there's a majority of maybe school systems where there are many, maybe superintendents or principals or individuals who look at bullying this way and say, it's a rite of passage, it's not a big deal, or who don't really take both sides of the story, because a lot of times it's not just clear cut bully victim. A lot of times there's like this intermingling where a victim might become a bully and a bully becomes a victim. And that bothers me so much. So this was my shout out to them, saying, hey, I know you're out there. We're coming for you. We're going to try to fix this and make it right. So,
what would you tell teachers that then if they run into a bullying situation? What do you recommend?
Oh, that's a great question too, because that can be really difficult. I think it would definitely first thing depend if it's boys, girls bullying, and what type of bullying. I think if you're in the classroom, or you hear, you know, a snide comment, or you see someone do something that isn't really very nice, the best thing to do is just point it out and say, hey, stop. I don't allow this in my classroom at all. And a lot of times it's easier to just let it go and whatever. But it's so much easier for students, because then a victim or someone who's maybe having trouble and not really sure they can speak up about bullying would say, this is a safe home. This is a safe place. This is a teacher I can come and talk to. This is a classroom I can come into when I need help and I need someone to look up to. And, you know, if you feel really, I always say this, if you feel really uncomfortable with something that's going on in the classroom, like you see it continually, even when you say something, I just talk to the guidance counselors, talk to the principal, I think the best thing to do is let a lot of people know that this is an issue so that other teachers, when they see it in the hallway or see it in another classroom, they'll also be able to point it out. Because one of the biggest problems we have when we're facing bullying is a lack of communication. And I know we were talking about it earlier with sometimes kids and adults. It's also just kids to kids and adults to adults. I think the more people we get involved in this effort of stopping bullying, the easier it will become. So if you're seeing bullying in the classroom, you know, definitely let them know it's not okay and let other teachers know, hey, you know, I've seen this happen like 3 or 4 times in the classroom. Maybe we can make a point of, you know, looking out in the hallway or looking out in our classrooms too.
Do you ever feel like people are walking down the hall sort of ignored? Because I think it's a lot of it's school culture. Mm-hmm. That sometimes we all have to be on board and we all have to be working on this common goal together. Mm-hmm. So that no matter where you see it happening, you have to say something. And as schools get bigger and bigger, it seems like it's harder and harder to kind of, you know, sort of be on top of everything everywhere kind of feeling. And so
Definitely. I mean, you bring up a really good point there. It shouldn't have to be the teacher's job to police every hallway, to police every classroom. And moreover, you know, you guys shouldn't have to feel responsible if kids are suffering out there. If you're really making an effort and you care, because you just physically can't be everywhere at every time. And to be truthfully honest, I mean, you know, teenagers and kids, we're pretty conniving. We see you. A lot of times we look for places where you're not going to be there and where, you know, we can make a sneaky attack. So I think, you know, the best thing to do as an adult really is just to be open and let the kids know that there is an open relationship, that they can come and talk to you if they have a problem, that you're there and you're ready to listen. Because a lot of times as kids, we just don't feel like we have an open communication, somebody can go and talk to, even if we can go and talk to you. And so just letting us know you're there and ready to listen. And yeah, that's pretty much, I think, something big. And I always encourage when I talk to like principals and stuff, and I would encourage you to tell your classes, maybe if you're having a health class or you talk about bullying, that it's important for kids to be independent too. Because we can't just lay all the blame on adults for this problem. It's also, if kids don't start standing up for bullying, then we're really not going to be able to stop it. And I think it's maybe part of our culture that we're used to just watching things. I know my mom and I say that sometimes we're desensitized to violence because we turn on the TV, you see violent movies, violent TV shows, you see aggressive speaking and acting, and then almost you go into school and it's every day. It's just normal. So definitely encouraging students that it's not normal. It's not normal to see this type of behavior in the classroom or anywhere else, and to stand up for what is right, even if it's hard. And I know that's difficult. That's a really difficult task. But I think that's one of the hardest hurdles we're overcoming here, is just really giving kids the push to, I mean, even myself, I see it. I'm a kid. Sometimes it's hard when you're in a group, you've got a group of friends and, you know, they're gossiping or whatever, and you don't want them to stop talking to you or not like you, but you know what they're doing is wrong and it bothers you. And you've just got to put that foot forward and say, you know what? I say this to myself a lot. If they're talking badly about someone else, they're probably talking badly about me too. So it's true. So you've got to just take that initiative and realize that you have to do what's right in the end. That's not always right for your friends or your peers, but what you know is right, maybe for the common good. And when you take that initiative, you're going to find friends who like you for who you are and who support good morals, even though sometimes it seems like you won't. They're there. They're waiting.
Bridget, first off, I'd like to say hi to Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl.
And hi, Bridget. It's been wonderful to listen to you.
Oh, hi. It's good to meet you virtually.
Yeah, she came in about 10 minutes ago. Did you find, when you're talking to schools and with your focus groups and all, are you seeing a lot of differences between what's happening for girls and what's happening for boys?
I definitely think there's a lot of differences. There are similarities, but definitely differences. boys seem to have a lot more physical violence. And I feel like a lot of times it'll be in the hallway, like shoving someone into a locker, or definitely in the locker rooms where teachers aren't really there to see things, where they know they can get away with it. And then with girls, it's a lot more social exclusion and shunning and gossiping. But I feel like boys and girls are both equally suffering from cyberbullying, and also an insult that has been growing and growing daily. The use of the word gay, saying, oh, you're so gay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you guys, you must, you're teachers too, right? So you must see a lot of that too. It must be hard.
I'm at the elementary, so thank goodness I'm not hearing that, but I hear other things.
That's
In
good.
Fact, even today we had, I guess, you know, I'm so clueless on dates right now. I didn't even know it was Groundhog Day till some guys reminded me yesterday. But we, I guess it's Chinese New Year. Is that correct? Today?
Yeah.
All right. We had, we had a special Chinese food in the cafeteria, and there was one boy, you know, totally innocent, had no idea what he was doing. And he was making this, you know, Chinese accent and making up these words. And, you know, I had to really talk to him about, this is offensive, what you're doing. And, you know, he had no clue. He said, I'm just making, I said, do you hear what you're saying? He goes, those aren't words. I'm just making up words. I said, no, that's not what I'm talking about. So, yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to culture. I mean, I'm thinking about all these reality shows, you know, and
yes.
I mean, constantly, you know, I mean, the whole vein is like, you know, the strongest will survive and everybody else is thrown under the bus. And, you know, a lot, like even when you said pushing, like the boy pushing another boy into a locker, like I see that stuff on the level of, you know, kids think they're playing and being funny. And then I will address it by saying, there's nothing funny about that. And, you know, I'll talk to kids. Oh, no, you're just kidding. I say, you're going to hit him by accident. You know, I saw somebody waving his hand in front of another student's face. And I said, and do you like that? And usually the student will say, no, I don't like it. And then I talk to them about, think about the kindergartners walking by and what they're seeing, or if a parent was walking by and what they're seeing. So even, you know, just trying to say, you know, getting back to what you said earlier, Bridget, you know, this isn't really normal. You know, we think it is, but it really isn't. It's actually a sign of aggression. One of the things that I see mostly is when a student will pretend to punch another student and come like 3 inches from the face. And then I sit down, I say, you just told that person that at any time I might hit you. You know, it really is sort of like, you know, the alpha saying, I am going to always have you second guessing where my fist is going to be, you know? And yet we all think, yeah, what? No, I'm just joking. It was just
a joke.
Well,
Peggy makes a point. A lot of times kids will say, oh, that was an accident.
Definitely.
Instead of thinking sort of through what they really did to the other person.
And
Trish is just asking, she said sometimes she feels the lines can be blurred between a conflict and bullying. Some days it may seem like an issue and the next day it may not. So, Bridget, do you have any tips for identifying the difference?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's a good point, too. I think that bullying, the difference between a bullying and a conflict is bullying usually is repetitive in nature. So it's going to happen more than often. Many times it'll happen the same place, the same time. It's continual. Whereas a conflict is, okay, it happens once or maybe once or twice. And usually it's not as detrimental because the part that's so painful about bullying is that it happens again and again and again and it doesn't stop. So when you're addressing something, if it seems like, well, this hasn't really happened before, this student doesn't seem like someone who would really do this. He's never acted like this before. Maybe it's more of a conflict and you sit down and explain why the behavior wasn't okay. And, you know, you discuss perhaps reasons why he or she might have behaved that way. And then when it comes to bullying, it's, well, I see this happening over and over again. I've heard this complaint before. I need to take a new approach because perhaps the student doesn't think what they're doing is wrong, or maybe they don't even care. Mm-hmm. So I think that's pretty much what I would decide.
Bridget, can you talk a little bit about the work that you did with getting the Massachusetts law that was passed?
Yeah, sure, definitely. That was probably one of the most exciting events in my life. So the Anti-Defamation League has been working really, really hard on doing legislation and promoting anti-bullying work here in Massachusetts. And there's a really fabulous man, Mr. Robert Treston, who originally I got in contact with him by going to one of their youth leadership programs, which was really exciting. And I got really involved in their anti-bullying work, and I spoke at a few different places. And I ended up testifying for their legislation, which is really fantastic because it's considered one of the most comprehensive in the nation. And it requires every school in Massachusetts, whether it's public, private, or charter, to have actual programs that they implement year long. And moreover, there is mandatory reporting by teachers in trying to get students to report as well. And a big issue has been there's bullying happens in the school. The parents aren't notified. So the parents have to be notified. Everybody has to be aware of this issue. And I think for me, the most exciting part is the programs, because so many schools don't have programs. And I realized, yes, maybe right now not every school will have programs, even though the law has been implemented. But I think, you know, 5 years down the road, we're really going to, I mean, already now we're seeing a difference. And five years down the road, I think it could be really amazing. And I know we had, I spoke with three other students about our experiences with bullying and why we thought this was really important legislation to pass. And it was really emotional for me because I had never really shared much about my own experiences with bullying, because I never really wanted to talk about it. It was really a touchy and painful subject. I hadn't really come fully to terms with it until I think like this, when I actually went to TEDx Redmond and I decided, okay, I really want to open up about this. But earlier I had to come to terms with it because I really wanted this legislation to pass, and I had to explain to them, this is why we need to protect kids. Because what's so crazy is that, you know, if, for instance, if Mr. Sprinkle, if, you know, you're out and about at the mall or whatever, and some guy comes up and punches you, you're protected under the law. If some guy comes up and starts verbally harassing you, or a woman or whatever, you're protected under the law. And you have police to say, okay, knock it off. We're here to support you. But as kids, we're given the same exact treatment, and we're said, oh, just ignore it. It's kids being kids. So that was like my whole standpoint as I spoke about legislation. And it was really nerve-wracking because there was like there's lots of legislators there, and I remember my hands were shaking and I was trying to read my speech. It was really exhilarating.
Good for you. That's quite an accomplishment to stand in front of a legislator.
Thanks. It was, I think it was a joint committee too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you said you're working on trying to get some national legislation passed too. How are you going about that?
It's definitely slow work. I know, I work really closely with the Anti-Defamation League, and they're starting to work on their national legislation platform. And I think the more the more states that start implementing laws, the easier it will be, because then we can come and say, well, look at all these other states have laws, but we need one national law that is completely comprehensive, like Massachusetts, perhaps. And I think one of the biggest problems we're going to face is if we pass this legislation, how are we going to implement it? I mean, there are thousands and thousands of schools, and many of them, I mean, we hear about how they're cutting sports and arts. How are they going to fund anti-bullying programs? I personally don't have the answer to that, but I think that's one of the greatest hurdles we're going to have to overcome when trying to pass national legislation. Of course, besides getting people to want to pass it, but I'm hoping to take a more active part in that as it starts to really come up and move forward. So, but I definitely encourage anyone listening or any of you guys, write to your state legislators, write to any of them, your Congress people, and say, hey, bullying is an issue. We need to have bullying prevention laws. We need to have programs in place. Or write to your town legislators too, because many, some states don't have comprehensive laws. A lot of states don't even talk about cyberbullying in their laws. I know a lot of them just say there's harassment is not prohibited due to sexual orientation, and that's considered a bullying law. And for me, yes, that is important to include in our bullying law, but it needs to encompass so much more.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, while Bridget was talking, Bridget, I wondered if you've ever been approached or have spoken to the folks at the Pew Internet Trust, because I just looked up cyberbullying, and they have their latest research is 2010. So I just put the link in the chat room.
Okay.
So have you ever, looked at their research or been approached by them? Because I really think if you haven't, they need to be talking to you.
I actually haven't really been approached by them or really checked them out that much. But thanks so much for posting the link. I'm definitely going to check it out too. Thanks.
Yeah, they've got some. We've had them on the show before, and they're always looking for specific, really timely surveys and research to do. So I think you should get a hold of them, especially Amanda Lenhart. She's the one who's been doing their articles.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah. Her email will be right there within her article. That's how we got in touch with them at first.
Oh, cool. Thanks so much. I really appreciate that. Awesomeness.
Alice, you talked about culture earlier, and that takes me back to, being an elementary teacher. You have the benefit of really creating a culture with the same students for the entire day, as opposed to like high school where people are moving around. Bridget, what could teachers do at any level to try to change that culture, classroom and school-wide, where, we just don't accept this anymore as normal? What would be a great first step for somebody that, that is like, all right, I'm going to do something tomorrow? What would you suggest?
I think the first step perhaps would, I think I might have mentioned it earlier, is just starting in your own classroom, just maybe letting them know, hey, I want you to know this is a bullying-free zone, and I'm not going to tolerate it at all. And so when you see it, just say, hey, that's not okay. I don't tolerate that in my classroom. That's not okay. And I think another thing to do would be perhaps talk to, I don't really know all of the politics in school, but maybe a guidance counselor or somebody about doing maybe a bullying project or presentation. Because a lot of schools, they do assemblies and they do different group bonding activities where they really explore the effects of bullying on students. Because I think a lot of times as kids, we look at everything as short term. And that totally is evident by, we post anything on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. So when it's no different when it comes to bullying. We just look at immediate satisfaction, not long term effects. So I think something you could do is try to make kids aware of how is this behavior actually going to affect other people? How might it affect you too? Because, all right, some kids, they might not want to be nice because they want to help other people. But they might want to be nice because they don't want to get themselves in a pickle, which is really, I find disheartening. But it's a way to market to your audience, to kids who maybe they don't really care yet. I think something that's really made a difference when I talk to kids is I say how when I was in 7th and 8th grade and I was bullied, still now I feel the effects. Still now sometimes when I walk into a group, I feel really insecure, which, doesn't even make sense because I'm confident with who I am. But you still feel that when I know people used to make fun of my legs and sometimes because I'm really tall and I still like, do I really want to wear heels? And it's this insecurity that keeps coming up again and again. And I remind kids, for instance, I don't like to bring up really depressing stories, but for instance, Phoebe Prince, could her life have been saved Could her life have been saved if just one person, the day that she took her life, said, "Hey, Phoebe, come hang out with me after school. How are you doing? Let's talk. I want to know what's coming on. Eat lunch with me." Just little things that can change people's lives, but we don't understand the way our actions can affect other people. And I say, all right, so you can make fun of someone, you can gossip about them, exclude them from your group, beat them up. All right, you're going to be popular maybe for a month, because that's how long really the popularity chain lasts until you have to do something else. And so you're popular for a month, maybe 2 months. All right, great. Are you happy? And okay, so you might be happy being popular for 2 months, but you might cause someone to be miserable. You might cause someone to take their own life. Is it worth it? Think about what you could do. You could be popular for a month, or you could save people's lives. And I think a lot of times we don't realize how our words and actions affect other people. I know if you, I remember watching a video about Columbine, and this one girl said, "I had no idea he was going to go home and come back the next day and do that. I had no idea. I knew the teasing was bad. I walked by it. I saw it every day. But now I wish I would have done something. I wish I would have stepped up and said, hey, are you okay? Let's talk. I wish I wouldn't have ignored the signs, which are so obviously there." And to me, that gives me shivers and it hits home. And I think more kids, we need to actually be shown, not maybe showing graphically, but how our actions truly affect other people. Because you don't want to regret that. You don't want to look back and say, I could have, I should have, but I didn't. Yeah. So just letting kids know that your actions are going to affect other people. If you want to talk, I'm here to talk. My classroom is a bully-free zone.
Yeah. Ooh. Yes.
So great. Yeah. Before we run out of time, I would love you to also talk about your work with NASA. I don't want to leave without recognizing you for that. First off, I mean, this one question I have, this, you're very passionate and articulate about this and just extraordinary person. Is this something that you see that you'll probably be involved with your whole life? I mean, I can't imagine it not being part of your life, but do you see that like, oh, maybe this is what I'll do, you know, later on, work with this? Have you thought about that at all? You got plenty of time, I know, but
I definitely have. I don't feel like this is something I can just move on from. Yeah. I think something that's going to be an important part of my life is staying up for children in America and maybe all around the world someday. Mm-hmm. I really feel like sometimes kids, we don't have a voice because, I mean, yeah, we're kids, we're not as experienced, but maybe, you know, sometimes that voice has to be heard. So I'm just trying to, I guess it's probably going to be part of my life. I hope so. I definitely hope so.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it will. And can you just quickly talk about what you do with NASA? Because I think that is so cool. And when I tell my students, when I, you know, show your video or something, I said, and that's not all. She works for NASA. And their eyes just bug out. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, she can go in an airplane. You and I can't go in. So, could you just talk about that briefly?
Oh,
did we lose you?
She's not.
Uh-oh.
Let me just call her back, okay? Okay.
Talking about
we're
NASA.
We're still wrong. Oh, connection lost. Okay, be right. Okay.
So we lost Bridget.
All right, Greg, go right up.
We can put a man on the moon, but we can't keep a person on Skype. NASA, I hope you're listening. No. I'm looking at my Skype. Oh, yeah, so we totally, try it again.
Just crashed.
Can I pull her in?
Nope, okay. She's not online just this minute.
Oh, all right.
I have her online. I'll see if I can get her in chat.
Okay, hold on.
Hang on. Bridget.
It's a cliffhanger.
It is.
I know. All right, there's the ring. Woo! Joe's Pizza. Did I? Sorry.
Something happened. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's the internet Gollum.
Yes.
Did you hear the entire question or lead in?
I don't know. I think maybe I
talk
was
about
just
NASA. I'm sorry.
I was just talking, and I saw like ringing. I was like, "Oh, have I been talking to myself?"
Yes.
We all do that.
We've all experienced that.
Okay, so basically, I worked on an independent study for the last since ninth grade with a teacher, Mr. Ron Dantwoods, at my school. And so last year, he taught me how to use all this different spectral and spatial imaging and image processing, and come to find out that I was actually going on a real mission, and I was getting a real NASA jumpsuit with my name on it. And so in June, we flew out to Lancaster, California, and we worked at Dryden Flight Research Center for about 1.5 weeks, and we set up all our instruments on NASA's DC-8, and we had lots of different spectral and spatial imaging so we could really understand how the reentry happened. And so then we flew to Australia, and we were there for a week, and we did an airborne observation over we were down in Melbourne, and of the reentry of the Japanese space probe Hayabusa. And basically a few years ago, or more than a few years ago, Japan sent a space probe, a Hayabusa, up to an asteroid called Itokawa, and it actually orbited the asteroid. And so you could actually see like 3D the shape of it, and it was interesting because it's a very small asteroid that they chose, and they part of it didn't work out as planned, but they thought maybe they might have a little particles from the actual asteroid. And unfortunately, most of the ionized engines from Hayabusa failed on its return home. And so there was a very slim chance it would make it back to Earth. But it made it back to Earth, which was so exciting. And then, come to find out, they actually found particles from the asteroid in the capsule. So it was huge success. It's so exciting.
Wow.
And
wow.
It's really exciting because the capsule, they used a different type of heat shield. They didn't use tiles. So that's very exciting to see if perhaps this is a new technology that we can use for shuttles going forward, because, you know, the tiles are cumbersome, and, you know, if one breaks off, then unfortunately the shuttle will explode.
Wow.
So I think it's pretty clear you're going places.
Yes. I was just saying that.
You've already been there.
What are you thinking about for after high school?
I'm probably considering doing aeronautical engineering. I think you can major in that, if not probably mechanical engineering and astronomy, but I also want to maybe do a double major so I can do maybe film studies or like creative writing or something like that, because I really want to, I have two passions, like helping people in writing and then science, and I want to keep them both part of my life.
I'm sure you can do this.
Yep, you'll figure it out.
Bridget, do you just love Stephen Hawking?
Yes, I got it. My dad got his new book for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, have us on your show later on.
Yeah, exactly. Life,
okay, don't forget about us. This is great, meeting all these young, amazing people, because, you know, you're sort of our retirement plan.
Exactly.
We will come work for you. So it's great. Speaking of which, I did want to give a shout out. I don't know if you saw this, Bridget, on Facebook. I saw you posted the show, and Adora Svitak, who put together TEDx Redmond, and she had you out to speak, and that's how we met. And my daughter got to go. She's flying to D.C. as we speak, I think, to accept the Lifetime Achievement Award from NEA. As a 13-year-old. And I think we talked about this before on a show, and they say, we usually give this to people that have lived a lifetime, a long lifetime, but you have done so much in such a short time, and right back at you too, Bridget. I mean, you are just doing so much, and You know, this your book alone is just such a resource. And one thing I've been wanting to ask you for a while is, do you speak to elementary schools as well as high schools?
Yes, I do. I speak to elementary, middle school, and high schools. I speak to really any grade age.
Because I'm trying to get you up to our school. So
that'd be awesome. That'd be great. That,
yeah. Do you speak to teachers?
Yeah, I do. I've actually done. Sometimes I'll speak to the students, and then I'll also speak to either the teachers or the parents or both. So it's always lots of fun. I really like doing it. It's fun stuff.
And you're really great at it.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. And
thanks.
You know, put more on your YouTube channel if you would, because it's great.
Definitely.
Well, we haven't heard the dogs bark.
No, they're sacked out in front of the fireplace.
Too much shoveling. But it is that time for Geek of the Week, and you found one right before coming on, right, Bridget? You had something to share?
That's correct, okay. Yeah. Oh, do you want me to share it now?
That'd be great, and we'll try to get the link in the show note.
I can do that.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Well, I found my English teacher shared it with me. It's we watch sometimes videos before we read books. And I really like them because they talk all about like different movements. And so there's one I watched. It's number 11 on the link. It's about the modernist era and basically the jazz age. And it talks about Gertrude Stein, Ernest Hemingway, and F. Scott Fitzgerald, and how they were also intertwined in how they went to Paris. And it was just really about the whole artistic movement and disillusionment after war. Of the jazz age. I thought it was really fascinating because I really like reading and I love to hear about how other writers or historical events affect someone's writing. So I really, we're reading The Great Gatsby right now. So it really helps me understand better what's actually going on. And I've read some of Ernest Hemingway stuff. So I was really able to look at it differently now. So it's very exciting.
It's great.
And what is that link? Do you have that? Available?
I put it in.
Oh, you already. Did? Okay. Maybe you can send that to me in the Skype so I can get it in because I can never click out. Excellent. And Alice, Cheryl, you want to go next?
I'll go because I got it right here. Okay. All right. Shout out to Kathy Walensky who showed me this at our meeting today. 3x3 links, which allows you to make a 3x3 grid that lets you organize your website so that you can make like a page of links with a picture, which would be great for younger kids. Or if you want to organize links around a resource, you can create these little pages and then we think you can embed them. We were looking at them to go on a Google site for some of the younger students.
Oh,
so it's kind of a nifty little tool. It's sort of like the live folders or Glam, but it's really nicely organized in this grid system.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sounds really cool.
Bob, want me to go?
Yes, please. I have too many, so I'll take us out.
All right. Well, I'm in the midst of our digital storytelling class with Electronic Village Online. And so we introduced Photo Babble this week, and the reason that I love it is that it can link, you can go into it through your Facebook account or link, if you don't mind doing that. But you take a photo, sign up very quickly, less than 2 minutes, and you can record a message and then easily send it out. So great for classrooms. Great for sending out messages to a small group and just very easy to do. Photo Babble. Cool. Yeah.
Very cool. And I have too many. So first I want to say, and Bridget, I'm not even sure if you know this, but if you have enjoyed tonight's show, you can catch Bridget's talk at TEDx Redmond. And I'll put that link in right now with the other great speakers there. Just amazing talks from student after student. And we have Priya and Maya Gennison from TEDx Redmond coming on next week. Did you know that, Bridget? Did I tell you that?
No, I didn't. That's so awesome.
So come join us same time, and we will see you in the chat room. And they'll be talking about creativity in schools and the idea of body image. And you can see their talks there, and very, very articulate sisters. That it's going to be a great show. Another thing that, for my Geek of the Week, one of the things that I wanted to share was, I'm multitasking here, you can tell, is this article that I got from Education Week about bullying, and I found it so fascinating. It's a study done out in Seattle, I believe, if I remember correctly, with 600 students, I think six schools, and they're really taking aim at bullying can be dealt with at the earliest stages, which is that gossip stage, that mean girl stage, or the, you know, the some of that chatter that we talked about earlier. And they, the problem with that is most teachers are saying, well, that's too nuanced to actually identify. But they filmed these students, and they were able to actually identify this stuff happening on the playground. And teachers, unfortunately, still could not identify it, if I remember correctly. But, you know, I want to read the whole study. I've just looked at the article, and it looks very interesting about, you know, we kind of think about, oh, that's the part where we say, you know, work this out, and maybe missing the starting embers of what becomes a fire later on. So very, very interesting. Let's see what my other one was. Art Project, Powered by Google. Yep, Alice, you've heard of that? Google takes street level to the art museum. So you go right into the art museum, you walk around, and you get to see the artwork up close, and it's very cool. I've had a little bit of trouble getting it to work, I think, due to snowstorm taking out servers and also the popularity of it. But definitely check that out. Art Project powered by Google. Amazing. Yeah, very good stuff.
Good.
And one thing I like is when you go to the page, you get a real close-up on the artwork that they're hosting on that page. So it's like zoomed right in.
Virtual field trip on steroids.
Yes. Well, Bridget, thank you so much. Yeah. And Bridget, for all that you've done and all that you will do. And this has just been such a pleasure to spend this time. And like I said at the beginning, I know this is just scratching the surface, and we'd love to have you on again. And it'd be great to get a bunch of TEDxers on and really have a great student conversation. We'll just be listeners, and you guys take over.
Right. That'd be really cool. Well, thanks so much for having me on today. This has been really great. You guys are so nice, and I really love the atmosphere of your show too.
Thanks.
Thank you. And you haven't even heard the dogs bark. Wow. Because that's when the fun really starts. Cheryl, you want to do the outro? You do it so well.
All right. I will do that since I wasn't here in the beginning. But I first want to thank our chat room, because you all really make our show with great links and questions and ponderings. And Bridget, thank you for being on our show, too. I want to also give a shout out to edtechtalk.com and worldbridges.net for having a place where we can webcast for free and bring all kinds of great shows to you. And don't forget, next Thursday, same time, same bat station, we have Maya, Priya, Gannison, and they are former TEDx Redmond presenters, just like Bridget.
So the fun.
So everybody can say good night.
Good night.
Good night. And Bridget, just stay on. We'll say goodbye to you. Thanks to the chat room.
Oh yeah.
And happy Groundhog Day to those.
Oh, right. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.